Welcome, everyone, to the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Sorry to start up a little bit late here, but I want to start off today with a couple of things. We're going to do a public hearing on Senate Bill 250, the opt-out bill for educational service districts, and a short public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 254. We have some amendments we need to talk about and possibly adopt, and we will not be moving that bill today. So let me first open up a hearing on Senate Bill 250. Linda, if you want to give us a short summary.
Certainly. Senate Bill 250 allows school districts to withdraw from and rejoin education school districts. It requires education service districts to distribute prorated amounts of state funding available to the school districts that withdraw.
Okay, we have some people have come in from an awful long ways here, and they are ready to come up. First, they wanted to defer to the governor's office. Dr. Golan, if you want to come up here first with your testimony.
Sure. I'm Nancy Golden, and I am the education advisor to the governor, Governor Kitzhaber. In addition to that, I'm superintendent of Springfield Public Schools, so for about the next 6 months. And so I wanted to just talk a little bit about, I want to give my support of the bill and talk a little bit about why I support the bill. And I was one of the co-chairs of the transition team that advised the governor. And we did say that our idea was that the money could go directly to the districts, but this is just as good. It's just about allowing that districts gets choice about is the ESD the organization who can provide the most effective and efficient services for your students, or would there be another way of doing it that would be better for the student and cost effective? So I wanted to use as an example just my school district because it's real. And right now, in terms of our ESD, and I have a sheet here, is that we, in terms of special education, well, I won't go through the whole thing, but I can give it to you. I want to just talk a little bit about special education. We have 11,000 students. We receive special education for our life skill students through the ESD. We have enough students that we could offer special education services right within our school district, and we believe save over about $1 million. Now, just one example, we have a student in Springfield, because the life skill program is full in Springfield, gets on a bus, goes all the way to Bethel, and we're paying $48,000 to transport that student a year, where if we could create the programs within our school district and pay for them, and then we've got smaller districts around us, because I'm concerned about the small districts too. They're our partners. If they could come in our district, so we have like Marcola or Lowell or Pleasant Hill, it would reduce transportation costs. More importantly, it would reduce the amount of time a child would spend on a school bus. So what we support is really looking at different models. We do think there's cost efficiencies that could be accomplished. And we also think it's very important to think about the large districts and the small districts as you do this, because they all have our children. And because of that, we're supportive of this. I know there's part of it is that you would create a plan to the State Department. Am I correct in there? And it would just be, we're very interested in seeing how that process would play out, too. So any questions?
Okay. Senator Morris?
Thank you. We seem to have a recurring theme amongst ESDs over time about dysfunction, governance issues. Are we getting the best value for the dollars invested? If you allow this bill to go through and opt-out, opt-in, and it can go in and out at will at any time, are we leaving behind the bigger issue of how ESDs function and how they are governed? And maybe speak to that issue.
Yeah.
In your judgment, is there a need to address that?
Well, I think to some degree this is why this bill is so aligned with where the governor's office, because it kind of allows an entrepreneurish model. If you don't think you're receiving the best service at most cost efficient, then you do go someplace else. But I would assume the ESDs would want to be the person who would provide that, so they would probably work towards that. And if that is the best service at the best cost, you would always go there. So I think it would that would be the challenge, like any other business, to really make sure you create it.
But for the districts that do not have that capacity, then they are left with maybe less than what they had hoped for.
Yeah. And I think this is the reason probably why there's a plan that goes to ODE, so that you can really make sure it functions for everyone. So it's not just that you can pull out. You have to have a plan in place that really outlines. I mean, this is kind of my assumption. It would sort of outline, you know, what you're planning on doing, and there might be questions in that plan also about the other services for other districts or something like that. I mean, clearly it's got to be thought out together, and I think it has the ability to do this. I think this would cause some change. I mean, I've heard people say we've been talking about ESD reform for a decade, and this would cause us to really move towards creating a different kind of model.
I think what I heard you say, Dr. Golden, too, was Springfield is large enough where you've got the economies of scale. You've got special needs instructors, speech pathologists, and the whole notion of ESDs, from what I understand, the intent when they were first formed was to help the smaller schools who didn't have those economies of scale of Springfield and Beaverton.
Mm-hmm.
And is that correct?
Yes, and I think right now in our ESD, we have a floor to provide services for the small schools, and we all support that. It's just I think it's not done as efficiently or as it could be. So we'd still want to really support the small school districts.
We would, too. And I think that's always been very intentional on this committee, trying to reform them, although we will hear later from some of the small schools that it's not working even for them. So very much thank you for your help.
Thank you.
Ozzy Rose.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Ozzy Rose. I represent the Oregon Association of ESDs, some long-term care clients, the Washington County School Districts. And I'm here to oppose this bill today. Also, I signed up last, Senator.
Mm-hmm. You're first in my heart.
I need
We're looking for the guy to oppose
it. First of all, the only thing I have to say, and I've got lots here that I could say, but I'm not going to waste your time. We oppose the opt-out as proposed because it undermines Oregon's long-term policy of equity for all kids, and because it doesn't address the problem that's before us, and that's how do we get things done more efficiently. If people talk about that, and the argument, and you just heard it, well, if districts could do their own thing, they'd buy where it was efficient. But if you spend any time analyzing what resources are there, where they'll go, and you've got to say, wait a minute, what am I trying to accomplish? There are 200 school districts, about three-fourths or more of them are going to tell you ESDs ought to be left alone. The ESDs, probably all of them are going to tell you that. But nobody has spent very much time asking the question, how can we squeeze the system to get more production out of the operation side into the program side? With rare exception, by the way, that's in the statute. That's supposed to have been going on. You guys passed a statute some time ago that says that the role of the SDs is to ensure equitable distribution of services to kids, and that the ESDs and their component school districts are supposed to be developing studies of the operations to achieve efficiencies. And then they define operations as what you might guess. Not much of that has gone on, in part because it takes, there's nobody to drive, you have to do it. ESDs may want to, districts may not want to, etc. And I think you need to drive that discussion. There is some work going on over in High Desert. Those folks hired Eco Northwest almost a year ago, and they have combined several functions, and they have five committees now studying other functions for the districts to all go together, human resources, etc. There's also activity going on in the Northwest. Five ESDs have been about 8 months working on proposal to allow any district in any of the five ESDs to buy their services any way they want to. And that's one answer. It doesn't get at the issue of, are there efficiencies by having one IT operation for half the state? Maybe there are, maybe there aren't. Nobody's dove into it. Are there efficiencies in rearranging how we do transportation rather than on a district-by-district basis? Are there ways? And there are people who can help make that happen. And that's the only thing that will get at our fundamental problem. We're not going to have enough resources in the near future for any public service, including education. And we've got to squeeze what we have to serve kids. And this bill doesn't do that. I'd like a bill that does, by the way. We will support an effort to, and we got to move quickly. I mean, you can't, another task force report 2 years from now, that isn't an answer. The answer is, we know a lot about the system, how it works. Now focus on driving the cost out of the operation side. And I'll add one other thing. As you all know, I've been around here quite a while. Every time there's an equity issue discussed, I've never heard a district submit a proposal that didn't benefit that district at the expense of some other districts. It's a zero-sum game. And the opt-out argument is the same thing. And I got numbers, so forth. I won't bother you with those. I'll talk to you more as we go along. But we need to change how we deliver services, because we need to reduce the cost on operations so they can go into program. And I want to dive in that, both feet, et cetera. I'll answer questions if you have questions.
Questions or comments? Senator Morse?
Well, thank you, Ozzy. Who would be a likely objective third party that could evaluate and develop, for lack of a better word, a business plan that focuses on the efficiencies and the effectiveness?
Well, in the High Desert case, I said they hired a private firm, Eco Northwest, that has driven that discussion. Now, the actual work's been done by all the school districts and the ESD involved, but the Eco Northwest folks have driven the process. And I don't know if we need private sector people to drive it. An objective third party could be me. But again, I don't know who plays that role, but somebody has to. It is really important that we address that issue, more important than we address how many ESDRs and so forth.
Sarah George.
Thank you. Ozzy, I actually agree with your premise that there's nobody driving any desire to change the system. I mean, the system is just continues. Everybody talks about what a poor system is and how we changed it. It seems like to me that what the intent on this bill would be is to basically break that logjam, give districts who want to break off on their own and try something new and innovative to go out and try it, and then give the ESDs an opportunity to be innovative themselves, change the way they do their practices to try to be competitive so people don't opt out. I mean, it seems like to me that we kind of have an opportunity to inject some consumer choice into that process. And so I'm trying to figure out why this would be. I agree with your premise. I disagree with your conclusion. I'm trying to understand where we miss each other.
If the premise, everybody talks about this, the big districts would walk out. In Lane County, if Springfield and Eugene left, other two biggest, they would take 65% of the resources of the ESD that are currently serving them and 14 other school districts. The 35% that's left over would be spread across trying to serve 14 school districts, all of them small. It would drive up the cost for those people. It may let the bigger districts have lower costs, but it hurts the system because if you go through and look at each ESD, it's the same thing. And equity is the problem. You can't just blow the system up. You have to have objective that pays attention to equity. Another interesting thing on the equity side.
Excuse me, Ozzie, if I could just interrupt just on that point. We've talked to the Department of Education many times about this, and they have pushed back and said, you know, there's no evidence to support this theory that if the bigs pull out of their ESD, that it will hurt the smalls on a dollar-for-dollar basis. There's no evidence of that. But if there was, is it fair to the people in Springfield to say, okay, your tax dollars are going to support smaller school districts in outlying areas? So on two counts there, I think there's some red flags.
Well, 2 points. I don't know what the department's reacting to, but if you talk to people trying to run these programs, what they would pull out if they lost the larger portions, it will impact and drive up costs for the others. There's no doubt about that.
But it would be a prorated amount.
Pardon?
It would be a prorated amount, and there shouldn't be any change. The small schools, they should still.
Mount Angel won't get the same services they get out of the core. They put together core services, and those are put together on the assumption everybody's in, and then they each get out of that core. And if you jerk out, like in this county, if the Salem pulls out, they take half of the core monies, and they still got 20 districts to serve with the other half.
The idea would be then that then WESD would have half the money. Perhaps it could cut half the administration. And every time, I think the notion, what we're trying to do here is reduce the number of superintendent and administrative positions. Every one of the superintendent's positions I look at is three special needs instructors, three speech pathologists, three teachers for every one of those positions. I think that's what we're all after here.
And I don't disagree with that. So there's only one ESD superintendent. But what's going on in High Desert, they have done away with the personal or human resource persons in one county or one district and are sharing that responsibility, all of them. The only way we squeeze the system, because we're 85% personnel, is squeeze how many we have working. And the problem is trying to squeeze it in a way that pushes money from one side to those three teachers. And there's no evidence that just letting a district take half the resources and leave gets you anywhere down that path toward better efficiency and still equity. And you mentioned what's fair. Equity isn't fair. Equity takes most of the funds from Multnomah and Clackamas County and sends them all over the state. In the ESDs alone, you can do the school districts too, but Multnomah ESD, for every $3 they levy with local levies, they get an additional $1 of general fund money from the state. Whereas this ESD, for every $1 they levy from local sources, they get $3 from the general fund. That's coming from somewhere else. And equity isn't about fairness in that sense. It's about fairness in the services we're supposed to be providing for every kid in Oregon. And this has been the battle since we...
Senator,
excuse me.
Ozzie, I guess I was in the building when Senator Hartung was doing the charter school bill. Mm-hmm. And the same exact argument was made that you can't just allow these charter schools to go out. So the equity argument was is that they're going to take the money with them, and then that'll drain the the primary school and the charter schools get the dollars. And so the compromise that was made was is that when you decided to opt out of the system and go with the charter school, you only got a percentage of the money, 80-90%. And so I understand your equity issue, and I don't want to get into the formulary and all those kind of things, but at the same time, it seems like if people think they can find innovative, creative ways to solve what has been a nagging problem in education, of providing these services, and some school districts want to break off and try some innovative things, I want to do everything I can to encourage them. If you have an equity issue and that's your issue, then perhaps what we can do is come up with some kind of, well, when you leave, you get, and I'm just making this number up, I have no idea the numbers, but 90% of the money is what you get, and 10% of your money stays with the ESD to serve the smaller districts, because the ESD is primarily designed to provide those services out to the smaller districts. But allow people some innovation and try some new things, and if it's an equity issue, it seems like we can solve that one. And that, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. Is it just your view that there's an inequity problem, or is there some other problem other than just the moving the money around on the table?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I have two problems. One is the equity. And by the way, one of the ways to solve that, we've taken a position, is any district can opt out if a majority of the district, the ESD, agree with that opt-out. And that forces a negotiation between all the districts to accomplish what you're suggesting. Maybe Springfield or Salem go, that's fine, but then you'll serve certain portions of kids a certain way, or you'll leave your money for that you've been taking, a portion of it for administration. I mean, there's a variety of things you might do that would satisfy all people and still allow the opt-out. That's one issue. But the underlying issue is opting out hasn't asked the question, what does it really contribute to the total system in terms of savings? And that's, we need to focus on that.
Okay. Thank you, Oz. We will keep this dialogue going with you. We have some people who came from a long distance away, and I want to start with Barry Demick, and we've got a couple panels from Baker City, but we also have some folks from Hermiston and from the thriving metropolis of Pine Needle. Committee members, you have also a letter of support in your packet, so your information from Sandy Husk, the superintendent of Salem-Keizer School District. And we also have a relatively large, but largely technical amendment coming on this bill from the Department of Education. It's not quite ready to go yet. So, Mr. Nemec, we'll turn it over to you. You guys get set up. Identify yourself when you start.
Mr. Chair, I am Barry Nemec. I'm the Special Education Director for Pine Needle.
Did I just turn that on?
Yeah, you did.
Pine Needle, Burnt River, North Powder, and Baker School District. And I'm here in support of the Senate Bill 250, as those four school districts I just mentioned, have been opting out for 3 years. Baker School District has been opting out for 12 years. Actually, this is our 13th year of all ESD services. That's for a number of reasons. As pull this up. One of the reasons is that, and we strongly believe that school districts do need the services. There is no doubt school districts need services in the area of special education. We do not need ESDs necessarily. There are a variety of service providers out there, and through some of our entrepreneurial adventures, I guess, we have been able to contract with other providers that have given us equities beyond what we imagined, and Doug will explain some of that. But one example I'd like to bring up quickly is we went with our local hospital for OTPT services, occupational therapy and physical therapy services. That bill went from $119,000 for our county down to $30,000. And from that,
I mean, that was what
so we were able to reinvest into kids. We don't think of it as a savings. We need to reinvest back into our kids. We were able to hire a CODA which is a certified occupational therapy assistant because of that. So we, again, double or triple our services.
I think that example is the essence of what we're trying to get at. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right. And that's one piece, and Doug will explain some more. But I believe through partnerships, he have found equities. And again, that doesn't necessarily come from an ESD.
And you're getting this, it sounds like, with the cooperation of that ESD, they're sort of letting you go?
Yes. Union Baker ESD, because of a number of issues I'm sure you're all aware of. 12 years ago, there were other issues with just our district, in particular around special education. We agreed on a bill, and our superintendent at that time thought there was an agreed on amount. Unfortunately, that came back double the price, and it took us 5 years to get back what we lost. So at that point, because of that, they allow us to opt out. Opt out of all special education services. And after, I guess this was in 2007 is when the South Consortium started, and that was where Pine Eagle, Burnt River, and North Powder were also allowed to opt out. It is mandated that the ESDs control our percentage of ADM that goes into the ESD. So it does take them to agree to let us to opt out. That was allowed, and we've been doing it for 3 years now, and our best estimate is about $150,000 that we reinvest into kids from the smaller districts. Again, that's about $200,000 a year for us. And that's a direct cost comparison. It's difficult to get direct costs from ESD. You don't have to give that to you. What we've done, and Doug will show you some more, is looked at the services we can compare directly, and those are the ones that we have substantial proof that, yes, there is savings. Let me go on. Did I just screw that up?
Well, she's going to have this up in a minute.
Okay. So Senate Bill 250 allows the consortia to continue, our 4 school district. Without Senate Bill 250, we will not be allowed to opt out and continue our efficient and effective, this is the most flexible program you can get. It allows school district to flourish.
And when you opt out now under this sort of understanding, mm-hmm. You get 100% of the dollars?
We get 90.
So you still save money even with getting 90%.
We do.
And ESD gets 10% for doing nothing?
They write the check to us.
We thought about that would be a great job to have. The 10%, I believe there's some more because of an unfunded liability as well. So it's not more than 10%, isn't it, that they keep? Or
it's about 10.
It's about 10. So there's some other issues there, but what we have found is an efficient and effective model that is based in rural eastern Oregon. We are fairly spread out. Pine Eagle's 50 miles from us. We have Burnt River, who's about 55 miles, 54. And we have North Powder, who's our closest school, and they're about 20 miles apart. What we do is we share services. Because we share services, we don't have that extra layer of administration. The service providers will always have jobs. We hired an extra one because of the South Consortium. Every occupational therapist, physical therapist, speech and language pathologist that are hired by ESDs, diagnosticians, psychologists, social workers, They will have their jobs. They may not work for an ESD, but they'll work for a school. Burnt Rivers, in particular, is a small school, and I believe Superintendent Ms. Andrews will speak to you about this as well. But because of the efficiencies in the small school, she's been able to provide more services to her kids as well, her students. You see where we are.
Now. Well, I think just those examples you cited, I mean, you can close down your PowerPoint. I think that's really...
Yeah, and we can show you very quickly on here what we're talking about. So.
I want to get to Doug and Mike, because they talk more specifically about efficiencies and how our kids are doing comparatively in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is Doug Dalton. I'm a chief financial officer for the district. And I know Mr. Rose talked about who might be the right person to come in, and maybe I was that person. For Eastern Oregon, I came out of private industry, large SEC company, as a chief financial officer. And when I came into this situation, mandating you buy a service from one provider would never be obviously allowed in private industry. And so what this county, because we've consolidated basically this entire county, what they've done is pretty incredible. And we'll go through that real quick. But I'm going to hop right to this. Really what I want to talk to you about, we brought two superintendents. We're a medium-sized district, basically. We're a little different than Springfield. But we've brought superintendents from very small districts to address specifically how this would impact them. And I think the benefit for you is that we are operating under Senate Bill 250. So as people theorize what might happen and what might not happen, we can answer some of those questions because we've been doing it for 12 years, and we can show you the success and the savings. So what it means basically operationally for us is we receive 90% of our funding in a check from the ESD to purchase services from whoever we choose. And when we go out, for example, an IT contract, we put it out for bid. The ESD will typically bid on it, as will private industry people bid on those, which allows, as second bullet point, providers to compete for the business. Makes the ESD better, and it makes the private industry better, and which eventually gets down to kids, and it provides a better service for kids. The efficiencies that can be gained, we're able to reinvest in students. And that's why when we get to test scores and things, you'll see that our students are outperforming the students in the ESDs around us. We've had some questions about what happens to the savings. It's a pretty complex system. We won't get into it. You guys have probably been through it several times. But the question comes up, what happens to the savings that you gain? If an IT provider underbids an ESD, what happens to the difference? We do reinvest it in kids. There's a federal mandate. We need to keep this kind of front and center that requires us to spend the same amount. Take one student Johnny. We're required to spend the same amount of money or more every year on that special education student. So the efficiencies don't mean all of a sudden we can spend $6,000 on that student instead of $8,000. We still need to spend $8,000. But we've stretched that dollar so much further that we can buy more therapists, more equipment, more software, more time with teachers. That equates to a better education. So we've stretched the dollar a lot further. and the students have... So example here is this, the bottom point. This is just our school district. The districts that are partnering with us in our county together have saved almost this much themselves. This is just us. We estimate our efficiency to be around $200,000 a year by allowing people to compete, and we're getting better service. I quickly threw together five things that $200,000 got reinvested into so you can make it real, right, to what did we spend it on. We were able to buy paraprofessionals to assist in the classroom, contact with children, speech pathologist, a certified occupational therapist. Every student has a laptop, and we were able to buy some specialized instructional software for these students. So all of these things clearly make for a better education for the students. This is the occupational, the OTPT cost that Barry referred to by going out and having a hospital who ended up winning the bid. This is the cost reduction we saw on an annual basis just for the same service, and we're actually servicing the kids more. Same story here, and you're going to see this over and over again. Here's information technology services. We had multiple providers. This was two of them, an ESD and the person that won the bid. And with IT, that's just a great example. When people bid on this, private industries are bidding on this, which hasn't happened in the past. They might come in and say, we don't understand everything about education or about what ODE, how it works, but here's what we do bring to the table: flexibility, innovations, creativity, ideas for students and teachers that that never would have surfaced had we not brought in a private industry that's used to working like that. So they won the bid. They were low cost, and we've trained them about the education side of the business, and now they are prepared to help many other districts. Just one example. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have on the finance side or how it's impacted these small schools. But in short, even the small schools, down to just a few kids, when this was prorated, as you had mentioned, because that's all they receive, is just their prorated share. They receive it just like we do, 90% of it. That is enough money in a competitive market for them to serve their kids. Because a lot of districts may say that it's not, or there's inequity in services, but they have served their kids better, and it's been enough money. So ODE's analysis has played out in real life for us. And we've brought a superintendent, a couple of them, that can testify to that.
Yeah, I very much appreciate this. This is very eye-opening, and I think you make the case better than I ever did, that the savings here to the state is not going to be spent in the corrections department. And the idea is the speech pathologists, the instruction, whatever, it's not really savings as much as it's we're spreading it out where it can do more for education. So, but sir, start off with your name and go from there.
My name's Mike Corley. I'm from the Pine Eagle School District, superintendent there. It's in Halfway, Oregon. Some of you might know that as half.com, and the rest of us know that it's just a stone's throw away from Hell's Canyon. I've been involved with the ESD and the schools for a number of years, and unlike Ozzy, I don't have that many years of experience, but I do want to say that unlike Ozzy also, I'm not going to be over here talking to you guys every week, and so I want to make what I say clear and understandable. Basically, where we're coming from is that we have achieved efficiencies and economies through innovation. In the first slide, the innovation relates to cost savings and increased learning. The innovation, basically, one is we basically insert or go around the cost of administrative services of an ESD. We cover these administrative services locally. We don't have to have a huge administrative oversight in our area. We serve fewer numbers of kids, obviously. But we're not burdened with large administrations. So when Ozzy talks about pushing operations to service, that's exactly what you do when you let local administration have the oversight over these services and bring them in through a local consortium or a local area consortium and still provide the same services with the administrative oversight that already exists within the school district. And so that's one area. The other thing you look at is student-centered management. You identify those issues and those needs at a local level, and you begin to go out and find those on a local level and bring them back into the school district. The most common one is OPTP, coming from the hospital. When we first started this consortium, we had a figure for what it was going to cost us to get occupational and physical therapy from the ESD. We went out looking, see if we could find it cheaper. We talked to Baker Community Hospital, which is now St. Alphonsus, and they were very interested in serving our needs because it kept one of their people working in Baker, plus give them enough work to do to continue the service. So it's local support for our area, and Baker is depressed just like everybody else. We want to keep the jobs in Baker if we can. Another area, student-centered management, is when we look for technology services. Instead of contracting with ESD, we were outside of Umatilla Morrill. Umatilla Morrill was doing ESD services and technology for most of the region. We went up for a bid. We asked them for a quote for those services. They were completely underbid by a local firm in Baker who is providing excellent services. Umatilla Morrill recommended that we get a second T1 line to handle our technology needs. The local provider said, wait a minute, we can get you a 2 gig to 20 gig DSL line for about the same money, and it goes T1 line's about 1.5 gig. So we, basically 10 times our access for virtually hardly any cost increase. The other advantage that we found in our local consortium is the local area. There was the reduced administrative oversight cost, and I talked a little bit about that, but reduced travel costs. It's amazing the number of people from ESDs that cross each other on an interstate going one way or the other. In reality, to save costs, the ESD did what they probably could and what they probably needed to do. They put two specialists in the car. So they come to Pine Eagle. One specialist had 4 hours of work. The other specialist had an hour of work. So what do? You guessed it. We sat there and watched 1 hour of work, read the newspaper in the lounge and the teacher's lounge for the four-hour work, went ahead and continued. There's a whole lot of built-in inefficiencies. Basically, just the size would build in the inefficiencies, particularly when you're dealing with local districts of different geographic differences and also different circumstances. We look at specialized credentials in our specialists. In other words, the same person does speech language, we send them back, get to whatever credentials they need to do diagnostic work. So one person comes and does that work. So I can go on and on and on about how we do things. You guys have a pretty good idea of the way we do things now, but I want to show you some of the actual realities of where we're performing. Umatilla-Morrill serves Umatilla-Morrill ESD serves the counties of Umatilla and Morrill. Baker ESD, Union Baker, for many years served Union County and Baker County. 3 years ago, the southern end of that county, or Baker County, broke away. And so we have basically the comparisons of the South Consortium to the north end of Baker County, or of Union Baker ESD, which is Union County, and then those of Umatilla-Morrill ESD. If you'll note on here, our performance based on the plans and the programs we put together has a significant impact on student performance. This one happens to be the large schools in those areas. The next slide, if you'll take a look at, is the small schools. Anybody that tells you that you can't do anything without an ESD probably is lacking a little bit of innovation and insights. They're not looking at how else they can serve. Now, I understand being a small school administrator, Pine Eagle has 172 kids, K through 12. I understand how the tendency is to look for somebody else to provide that service for you because you've got enough to do. Not only are you the superintendent, you're also the janitor, the custodian, in our case sometimes the horse wrangler. You know, the point is that you have enough to do now. So the other part of that, thank you. The main part of that is that ESD, or local, rural, remote school districts, can collaborate through partnerships and local area consortiums to provide service, do it effectively and efficiently. The slide you're looking at now are for, if you click, are for small schools. And you can see how the small schools compare. Now, concerning the area that ESDs concentrate on, and that is, of course, handicapped learner, providing services for handicapped learner, the only data I had for the small schools here was Pine Eagle and Burnt River, to be honest with you, because that's not public data in such that it comes out readily, and it happened to be that the superintendent from Burnt River is here, and we combined our data. But if you'll take a look at the Baker ESD, or the Baker 5J school district, in comparison to those larger districts in Eastern Oregon and Umatilla-Morrill and Union County, you'll find that the efficiency of the consortium is showing up in our student performance. And particularly important to us is those special needs students. If we move on then to the next slide, how is that efficient, or how does the efficiency play into that? We took the five services that are provided for special ed in the ESD that are a matter of resolution plan for that district. That includes, at this time, includes speech language, includes occupational and physical therapy. It also includes special ed administration, and help me on one
diagnostic.
More. And diagnostic. We took those and compared them to the other schools, or at least one other school. This is kind of a little bit of a complicated slide, because if you'll take a look at the far right, the column on the far right, that was the cost of services from Union Baker in 2007-2008 when we chose to opt out and basically go with the consortium. If you look to the far left, that is what the cost of those same services are today for substantially the same caseload. The thing that the middle, the one in the middle, is a comparable district that's still in the Union Baker ESD, and you can see that the savings we've achieved by the principles of effectiveness and innovation, innovativeness, by using people that are multiply certified, by using people that don't have so far to travel, they made a difference on us, and we've taken that difference and we've reinvested in students in the form of technology and other services that are basically provided by the ESD. So if you remember nothing else about this, remember that I can't be here to remind you guys of our efficiency and effectively like some other folks can, but as you sit around sometime, and I'm sure you've got nothing to do at night except to look at this pamphlet, but as you look at it, I'd like to have you take a look at the far right column again. That's pre-consortium cost for ESD special service, special needs services, and then if you take a look at the far left, you'll find the cost that we are now paying for those same services because of the innovation we have applied to it. There's two examples of that, one from Pine Eagle, and then the one behind that is Burnt River. So thank you very much for your time, and I'd be more than glad to call you and talk to you every day, but you probably got other things to do.
Very much. We have as well also offered that if other districts, counties have questions about our model, because I don't think most people probably don't know we've been operating under it clear on Eastern Oregon. We're probably out there operating without anybody knowing. But a lot of districts, if they have questions about how it's going to impact them, concerns about the risks or whatever, we're happy to take this team and go to their district or county and help implement something for them.
Okay. Very good. This is very helpful. And you were here today. The senator from your district is Senator
Farioli.
Yeah.
Okay.
Strongly supports this.
Well, I was with you until then.
Senator George.
Superintendent, thank you very much for coming today, and it was obviously very enlightening. I got a question for you about the way you guys structured this, because I want to make sure it's done so I understand it. Baker is obviously a fairly good-sized school district.
20,000 students.
What's how many?
2,400.
Okay, so I mean it's not
medium,
but nonetheless, compared to your folks, it's a good-sized school district. When you enter into this kind of arrangement, I think what a lot of small school districts around the state are concerned about is that if Salem-Keizer pulls out, and then they've got a choice between the ESD or Salem-Keizer to kind of sign up for their goods and services, that it's sort of trading one master for another master. How did you guys put this together so that Baker didn't become the dominant partner that sort of maybe didn't provide as good a service as they provided to their own district? How does that relationship work so we don't have one dominant partner that sort of rolls the other two small partners?
Well, probably Baker County is a little bit unique in that we're so scattered apart that we depend a lot upon each other, but also Baker is the economic hub of the county, and all of us shop in Baker or at least go to that area. When we initially started it, we were starting it with what will our dollars buy. In other words, we weren't asking Baker to contribute or to put into that pot. In other words, the idea of, well, the big districts have to stay in so that the little districts can survive. We simply took the dollars that we had that were earned by the ESD for our population and our property tax, actually not our property tax, but that was included in the formula, and we applied that to establishing services with Baker. Now, Baker gets a little bit of an advantage. We hire their special ed administrator to do the administration of the consortium, reducing Baker's cost for that person and I think his secretary. So there's some advantage there. The other part of that is that
one thing too. Next year they're replacing me, and because they found somebody else to do it, and that's the flexibility we've built.
That's the protection I think you're asking about. Is if we weren't providing him the service for some reason, or there wasn't an equity there, he has the ability to get it from somewhere else. And I think that's what makes this work out in an open market. And I think we firmly believe this is what will. Somebody had asked the question. This will sharpen the pencil of ESDs from management down, because they have to compete. And if they're inefficient, they will not be selling services. And he could buy the service from anybody.
We buy the services our need based upon our allocation, based upon the service credits we generate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question to Mr. Corley. I followed all the slides about the cost savings, and I think that was pretty clear. But I had a question about your slide that showed the difference in the OAKS scores.
Mm-hmm.
Because can you talk a little bit about how you hold all the other, how do you consider all the other factors that go into student scores so that you can attribute a difference in scores to the different structure, to opting out of the ESD?
Well, basically, we have a partnership also on school improvement. We don't have an exchange of finances, but Baker runs a school improvement program. They have a curriculum specialist that does the work there. We also have curriculum specialists. Some of our people are going in and working with Baker teachers. Some of Baker's teachers are specialists are coming out and working with our people. So there's not an exchange of money there, just an exchange of expertise. We're rather fortunate. We do have a lot of young, very energetic and ambitious young people on our staff. Some of them have gone back. They've looked at, actually had training through some of the other ESDs, curriculum mapping processes through their data warehouses and those type of things that they bring back to the table and begin to look at, where are we not excelling, where are we not meeting what we need to do in our standards, and they go in and work with teachers to improve that. So the money that we're using from the ESD, little of it on the fourth through little of it goes back into a school improvement, I will admit. We use school district money to send teachers out for training and professional development, but primarily it's the strength of the partnership. Now I'm not advocating saying everybody can build this kind of partnership, but I think everybody can apply innovation and partnerships with other local area schools and produce some of these efficiencies or a lot of these efficiencies. And like we said, we're willing to work with other people that would like to try this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As legislators, our task is to look at the whole. And in light of the pretty strong language that has been used with respect to the Union Baker ESD corruption and mismanagement, that's very strong language. The question that I have is, how do we then construct a model that addresses the inefficiencies and the poor management, as it may be, in the districts that have not opted out and formed the kind of consortium that you've done? Essentially, what you've done, it appears to me, is you've created another ESD. You just kind of reformed it, and you're providing, by pooling resources and working together, you've gotten the efficiencies that were intended when the ESDs were first created. And I guess my question would be not only the issue of how do you reform these ESDs that may be remaining, that need to be reformed, and are you making a case for maybe just repealing the ESD statutes, giving the districts the money, and letting them go back and reinvent themselves?
I'm not advocating destroying the ESD system. That's not our advocacy here. I think a market-driven service provider is absolutely the key to providing efficiencies. When you're able to go out and seek those kind of services that are competitively bid on the market, I think you're going to find that there's going to become efficiencies. You absolutely have to have a plan. You have to be innovative. You have to provide leadership. You have to take that down to your staff and involve your staff in. You have to articulate the goals and what direction you're going. You can't just let them happen through circumstance. Now, with us, one of the particular issues is that 15 years ago, Baker ESD got in trouble for whatever reason. I don't remember the circumstances. I was around, but I don't remember. So the first thing we did was pull up stakes. They moved Baker. They were going to reform Baker, so they sent them to Union and combined Union Baker. That was 50 miles farther down the road for us. So a few years ago, Union Baker got in trouble. So what do? Well, we merge them with Yuma-Tillamore and form a Intermountain Regional District. Well, now that's 150 miles down the road for us. That's almost like requiring Salem to attend ESD meetings in Prineville. The efficiency, if I attend one ESD meeting a month, it takes me all day to do it. Basically, that's 5% of my time, and I've got better uses for 5% of my time in our own building. So, in reality, I'm not advocating that we destroy ESDs, but I do advocate for making ESDs accountable. Essentially, right now, they have a loosely regulated monopoly. They're basically, they're not held accountable. We're accountable for student performance, not ESDs. We're accountable for the performance of children in special needs children, handicapped children. When we require, when we write up an IEP and the IEP says the student will receive 5 hours of one-on-one speech-language therapy, and we call the ESD and say, you know, we need 5 hours down here. We need this. We need a person in our district 3 days a week, for example. And they say, well, I'm sorry, we just can't provide that. So what do? Well, obviously, we have to go out and provide the rest of it, or we're outside. We're in violation of the law. So I think market-driven ESDs are absolutely important. I think Walt, a little bit later, will talk to you about some experiences with other ESDs that are market-driven and become more effective.
And we do think that it will take care of itself, the opt-out. It will take care of a lot of what you're asking about in the structure of what remains, because they will be competing for business. That's what keeps our structure honest and with high integrity, because they can buy it from anybody. So it takes care of itself.
Thank you, gentlemen. We have some of your colleagues and neighbors here as well. I'd like to bring them up. I have Lori Andrews, Ginger Savage, and I want to make sure that everybody who came over the mountains today or yesterday has a chance for the center.
For the record, my name is Lori Andrews, and I'm the superintendent at Burnt River School District, which is by far the smallest school district in the South Consortium. We have an enrollment of 35 students, K through 12. I think that we have proven that small schools can work in a consortium. It's been beneficial to our students. It's worked well geographically. We're at the far end of the new merged ESD, and we're about 50 miles from Baker. And I think that this works, and it happened because we decided, like Mike said, that we're going to be innovative, and we're going to make it work, and we're going to make it work for students. So that's basically what happened, and we came together as a group, and we were committed to doing that. I think when we look back at ESDs, it's a comfortable place. It's a comfortable place for small schools because superintendents, principals have many hats in small schools. And so when you think about services for special needs students, the ESD was an easy solution to that. It's taken care of. I don't have to worry about it. But is it necessarily efficient? Not always. And is it what's best for students? Not in our case. So we came together as a group to make that work. And one of the main points, again, is that it's local. Our services are not coming from Pendleton out to Burnt River, which is 3 mountain passes away. Our services are coming from Baker. So also in a small school, you need to remember that our needs change, sometimes weekly, sometimes during the month, sometimes it's each year. And so as a small group, we've been able to address that and change those as we needed to with our students, as our population changes.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having us. My name is Walt Wegener. I am the superintendent of Baker 5J. You know, we kind of consider ourselves an island in the desert. And given the my particular background is multi-state, and I've worked with other ESD models besides the ESD model that's here in Oregon. And in fact, I've worked on an island that was remote and necessary. And in a competitive environment, you can buy services that provide you with what you actually need. And our community, like all communities, answers to a school board that looks at the services of kids that are neighbors that live in the same island in the desert. And I don't know how to express this better than to say, if you live in Portland and your ESD is in Eugene, it's a little bit unnerving to think those aren't really your neighbors. And one of the reasons why the South Consortia is so committed to local accountability and local responsibility and the option of being able to opt out is we have mountain passes between us and the people that would provide those services. It's very much like Salem to Bend. And this is, when you think about it, somewhat geographically ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Particularly when through efficiency we get economies, and through economy we get effectiveness by rolling the money back in to what's important for parents, what's important for students, and that is improved performance by providing additional service. And I realize that's not specific, but we're trying not to be redundant here, and the people that just in front of us had a great deal of specificity about that. So we have a watershed problem. But the other thing about it, I would like to share one idea about entrepreneurial ESD work and what can be done. Stephen Constantino is a national figure in education. He's very expensive, with travel expenses and everything, maybe $15,000 a day. He does family schools and teacher development around family schools. And you can go to the Center for Educational Leadership or Northwest Regional Labs or Columbia University or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and you'll find out that there are two things that school districts can bring to families that will make their students successful. One is support families as much as possible and earn the support of families local. And two is the best possible teachers available. So an ESD might decide when it surveys the school districts in its area that they would like to bring Stephen Constantino in to get this regional best practice in the area. That costs $15,000 a day. But if you contact Stephen Constantino, he will help with the advertising. And if you charge, and if the ESD determines they've got 100, or maybe they've got 200 teachers that want to come, at $150 a day, they can raise the money, the ESD can, so that the whole region can have access to this nationally recognized educator. And they make a profit. That's the entrepreneurial side. So they have more money to roll in to additional services. It's a different model. But I trust you'll believe me when I tell you it works in other places. So we don't have to be stuck on the monopoly of just shoveling money over to a bureaucracy that's so far away from us that they don't even know our kids. So that's a segue to Ginger.
Thank you so much. My name is Ginger Savage. I am in my eighth year on the Baker 5J Board of Education. But more importantly, I'm here to talk about what we're talking all about, and that's kids. My oldest son is a sophomore at Colorado School of Mines, majoring in physics. My youngest son is a junior at Baker High School. He's in the top 20% of his class. He's a member of National Honor Society. At the age of 8, he was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome or high-functioning autism. He has gone to Baker School District in the opt-out model his entire special education career. He plans to go to DigiPen Institute in Redmond, Washington, where he wants to be a video game designer. He's never, ever had a point in his life where he's been handicapped by anybody. And I'm here to tell you about Lee, a little bit about Lee's journey through this process, because they're going to tell you ESDs are going to tell you that we don't care about our kids, that we don't want the best possible services for our kids. Barry Nemec was very shy about the fact that Barry Nemec is one of the best autism specialists there is, and I wouldn't have anybody else in the world working with my son. Lee was diagnosed, shall we say, there was a problem when he was in second grade with a master teacher. I call master teachers not by what their degree says, but that teacher who was born to be a teacher. And Pat Mousen came to us and said, "Something's wrong with your son." She knew the system. We got in early. We got diagnosed. Our school district went through every service they had available. And Lee Robert was just in the middle on everything. What was the next step? And this is critically important, was to go to Oregon Health Sciences Child Development Rehabilitation Center. We got there with a pretty frightened 8-year-old for a very exhaustive day. When we came in to finally, frightened parents, to finally have somebody explain to us what's wrong with our child, the first thing those specialists did, a pediatrician, a child psychologist, a speech pathology specialist, a special education specialist said, "Your school district should be commended. We have never seen paperwork as incredibly complete as yours." You see, they tested Lee, and they went back. You know, they went to, because sometimes school districts make mistakes, so they kind of test them on some of the basic testing skills. And when they're getting it, and the school district is right. 5J did the paperwork right. So we were able to get to an answer pretty quickly with our son. He has been helped by special education teachers, the same special education teachers. Continuity of service becomes incredibly important to special needs children. The same people, Ann Rowan, Sue Irby, and Susie Cole. Those are the heroes. Susie Cole working to get him modifications for his SAT so that he can go to college, because that's the expectation. He will go to college. These kids need that protection. We don't need a specialist coming in one day and then somebody else the next. They need to know that that classroom teacher is going to stay the same. I could go on, as you can imagine, talking about my kid. He's pretty special all the way around. But the one of the things I want to ask you really clearly is, we get in a really good feeling for what we're doing. We're really proud of what we've done here. But this bill doesn't take effect until 2013. You've got to protect Baker. You've got to protect Lee Robert, because he's got to have, he's going into his senior year. This is when we've got to get it all tied together so that we can get him into a college placement so that he can go on and be a successful human being. Right now, we're kind of scared. We think we were gaining ground here. We've been sitting out there for a long time screaming and hollering at you, and we're close. You need to protect us. Just let us get there. If this bill passes, and we sure hope it does, just make sure we can keep doing what we're doing for the Burnt Rivers, for the Pine Eagles, for our kids. And I think, for me, I don't know if you know the story of Baker County and how remarkable a place it is, but we had a gentleman leave his entire fortune to the children of Baker County. When he passed away in 1997, it was the single largest bequest. Every child in Baker County received some sort of financial assistance to go to college from Leo Adler. And when the foundation leaders, they decided they needed to have a definitive biography written of Leo. And the author, Adair Law, wrote these that she believed, in all of her research, were the core values that Leo's father taught them to live by. We don't do what would Jesus do. We do what would Leo do. And what would Leo do? He'd work hard, deal honestly, love your family, honor your religion, give back to your community, give your time, and give your talent. And that's what Leo did. We ask you to let us deal honestly, because that's what we're doing with our neighbors. We're really proud of this. So if you have any questions for us, please do so. Please, we just need your support.
Thank you very much for your heartfelt testimony. Questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you for your support. We know the effort it took to get over here. It's full day or two for you, and we very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is that, do we take care of that, the Eastside contingent today?
Anybody for else? Us, it does.
Yeah, anybody else here from?
That's it.
That's it, okay. Okay, the Council on Developmental Disabilities, Catherine, you're here today. She's stepped out. Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 250? Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 250, and I should say to the committee that we do have some more amendments coming. In addition to that, we have our own committee bill that has not been first read yet. It has to do with ESDs and changing the formula amount. As you know, there's a 4.75% figure in the in existing law, and that will be before us the next time we hear this. And in addition to that, Representative Comp has a bill, House Bill 2298, on ESDs, in which both of these bills are not mutually exclusive. In fact, they probably should be combined at some point, but they also can run independently. Changes the governance of ESDs so that they are not elected board members, but in fact, they would be overseen by already elected school boards that are involved with those ESDs, as your model. So we've got a couple of fronts out there before this all coalesces, and there's more to come. So thank you all, and especially to our contingent from Eastern Oregon. At this point, I'm going to open up a brief hearing on Senate Bill 254 for higher ed bills. And you want to give a brief summary to remind us?
Senate Bill 254 creates and administers an accelerated college credit account to provide grants, to provide training for teachers who give instructions in accelerated college credit programs, and to award grants to assist students in paying for college credits.
And I have a couple of people who have signed up to testify. Before we get there, I want to get Cindy Hunt from the department to go over some issues with this. This is one of the task force on higher education bills and dual credits, with the idea of expanding the availability, the accessibility of high school kids earning college credits.
Great. Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Hunt. I'm the Government and Legal Affairs Manager for the Department of Education. I've also brought with me from the Department of Education Andrea Morgan, who operates the grant program that we think that this bill would affect. So if you have technical questions, Andrea is available to answer them. Your committee administrator, Linda, asked us to review the bill because there had been some issues about whether or not some of the provisions in the bill would put into jeopardy some federal grant funds or some state grant funds. The specific issue, I believe, that had arisen was around what the bill allows is that if the educational entity has paid for a program, they have to pay for a third of the cost, and then the grant would make up the rest of it. When we reviewed the bill, we don't believe that that particular provision would run afoul of any federal or state grant funds. However, there's also a provision in the bill that would allow the Department of Ed to administer the grant funds so that the grants could be used for assisting students in paying for the examinations, for college credit, and for tests or other fees related to the accelerated college credit program. We believe that this would potentially be seen as supplanting supplanting federal funds with state funds. Traditionally, the Department of Education has had a grant, a test fee program grant. Currently, we do not have the grant. However, we have submitted an application to continue the grant, and the amount of the grant funds from the federal government, if we were to receive the grant, would be $500,000. So what we're asking today is just to remove out of the bill that two lines, and then other than that, we think that the bill would work and it would not jeopardize federal funds.
Okay. We tried to take a swing at this in the -2 amendments, and you're saying those don't work either?
I have not seen the -2 amendments.
Oh, okay. Okay, well,
Mr. Chair, what, Cindy, what lines are they that we're talking about? I don't have the dash 2.
It's on page 1, lines 15 and 16.
15 and 16. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Okay. And this doesn't do that. Okay, so I think we need some dash 3s. And you'll help us with that. And the committee knows this is destined to go to Ways and Means. There is a $250,000 sort of placeholder amount in the dash 1s, which I hope we'll adopt. And then with your amendments, we can adopt that and send it on its way.
Great. We'd be happy to work with your committee administrator with amendments.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you both. Anybody else here on 254? Okay, then let me close the hearing on 254. Any other business before the committee, Senator Shields?
No, thank you.
And we are adjourned.